Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Carpaccio, sell! Carpaccio, sell! Carpaccio, sell! Carpaccio, sell! Carpaccio, sell! Carpaccio, sell! Carpaccio, sell!
On WGR.
26? When does it start? 7 tomorrow? Or 8? 27 hours.
Eight. Sorry, I wasn't on mic.
Didn't know. Yep. 27 hours to the first round of the draft, to the Arizona Cardinals being on the clock and maybe or probably or definitely taking Oklahoma quarterback Kyler Murray. That would mean the Oklahoma quarterback was the first pick in the draft 2 years in a row. That's pretty good.
Yes, it is.
If that happens. Sal Capaccio with us now, and we'll run through some different scenarios and talk about it here with Sal. Getting excited in here, Sal. I'm sure you are too.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. A lot of reasons to be excited, but you know, tomorrow's a cool day, and all the things that are starting to happen today, all the reports tomorrow. It is really cool reality TV, you know, because even the players involved kind of don't know. It's not, you know, there's no script or anything. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I for a while we used to do, like, we were anchoring the radio coverage in here on like when it was on a Saturday, and that just got to be really arduous because it was, you know, to me it just felt like I'm supposed to pretend that I know what I'm talking about all these guys, and like that's just absurd.
Remember the Roscoe Parrish year?
Right, we were in here until like 8 o'clock at night. I missed a friend's wedding, and I'm just like, what am I doing here? Like, so I sort of started to have some personal and professional animosity toward the draft, and then I realized once I got freed of that, I loved it. Like, Saturdays, and this is still before it got into primetime, Sal, Saturdays would, you know, a nice Saturday, end of April, I'm working around the house, and I just keep going inside to see what's happening. I was glued to it. It's super compelling. I picked it as my favorite sports day of the year when we were ranking sports days.
I was thinking about that, and one of the reasons why you would do that is because everybody's involved, right? I mean, like, the Super Bowl, people watch because it's the Super Bowl and it's a reason to get together. But there's nothing at stake for any team except for the two teams that are playing, right? The other 30 fans have nothing really at stake unless you're betting on the game or something. Here, everybody's involved in some way, shape, or form. Now, you might not have a first-round pick. There's five teams like that tomorrow. But everybody has something that they have at stake. This is kind of, it's, you know, Super Bowl light for them. This is a prize that's coming their way, and how do you get it, and who do you get?
Right, and it's one of those ultimate. It's the trick the NFL like plays on everybody is that all these guys are great because they all look great. Mostly the reviews of the guys that go in the first round are positive. There's always those years where Mel Kiper is, you know, lighting someone on fire for what they just did and how wrong they are or whatever. But it feels like that's more rare now. That's not to say that they're not critical on those shows at all, but mostly it's just, this guy's really great. Look at how great he is. And look, I'll tell you what.
He can flat out play.
Right,
he can flat out play.
Right. I'm thinking of Gruden, and he's not there anymore either. But like, this guy, I love this guy. Let me tell you about this guy. And like, you just sit there watching it going, all right, I like this guy. John Gruden likes this guy. Like, that's the draft.
I love the criticism. I need the criticism. I need Kiper to be like, the Colts have no idea how the draft works. I don't know if he never sounds like that, but I kind of feel like you're right that it's much softer now.
Yeah, it feels muted now. Yeah.
You know, even if you just limit it to the executives and don't make it about the players, fine. I still want some of that. All right, Sal, so what's our money on here on the eve of the draft? Bills and just overall?
Well, I think the Bills would love to trade down, and I've thought that from day one. I think this is prime spot to trade down, and I think some of the stuff that's happening today is starting to point more in that direction. Mm-hmm. That would be a really nice move for them. You know, that was my preferred option from the beginning. I've always believed it was Brandon Bean's preferred option, going back to his comment at the Senior Bowl when he said, We needed to be in the top 10 last year to get our quarterback. We're in the top 10 this year, but we don't even need to be there, basically, is what he said. And I think that was basically putting a for sale sign in the number 9 pick. You know, you always hope then for the quarterbacks to kind of rise up the board when you don't need one. That's more talent that gets pushed down to you if you do pick, or it's more people who want to have your pick in that situation. So I think that that is what I'd love to see for the Bills tomorrow. If they do stay at number 9, you know, I go back and forth on this. You guys know I've been saying defensive line is probably more in play than anything for me. Mm-hmm. I've gone with Christian Wilkins. I think about Ed Oliver if he's there. I think offensive line, though, the closer we get here could be something that I'm, you know, thinking they could still want to do, because, you know, they have really made this real, real big commitment to Josh Allen and protecting him and getting him weapons. And there's going to be a couple guys there that, you know, they could continue to do that with.
And we've talked about two of those players, the offensive tackles, Williams from Alabama. And that's Alabama, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And also Jawan Taylor from Florida. There's another guy, Dillard, Andre Dillard, that I've read some people write that may be the number one tackle pick. That might be a surprise tomorrow night. What do you think about that?
Yeah, because he's a left tackle. You know, if you take Jawan Taylor, that's the thing about Jawan Taylor, guys. Like, he's a right tackle. Like, if you're going to take Jawan Taylor, okay, so what happens to Ty Insecki? Is he just suddenly at his contract, which he got a nice little contract from the Bills. Does he go and compete at left tackle with Deion Dawkins? Like, I don't know. I don't see that happening. So, to me, Jawan Taylor's never been the guy necessarily in the mix up there. I could see Jonah Williams, because they love position flexibility. He could do that. Now, I think he's a tackle in the league. He says he's a tackle. Most people are saying he's a tackle, but some question if he could play guard, if he has to play guard because he's not as long. So, you know, he's that guy. But they're all three are different. Then you go to Dillard. Dillard is a left tackle, 4-year starter at left tackle. And he's intelligent. He kind of checks off all those boxes. So if I was to go, if the Bills are going to draft an offensive lineman, to me, I would put probably Williams and Dillard would be really tough for me to separate, but I would certainly put Taylor behind both of them.
Okay.
It might depend what the Bills would do if they're thinking about that position in this dilemma as you're framing it here, whether or not they think Dawkins could play guard. Because if you're going to take Dillard to be your left tackle, because that's what he is, then I think you're thinking about moving Dawkins inside, probably, because you've got this right tackle and Seki, you're making the point about him too. Or if you really like Dawkins, then I think you might have to settle for, well, we're going to draft a guard 9th, which, mm-hmm. you know, in a lot of years I would have gone, oh, come on. But, I mean, what's the name of the guy the Colts drafted last year with the
Nelson.
Pick? Quentin Nelson, right? I mean, I could not stop watching the gifts of him annihilating people's souls last year. So, like, okay, like, maybe that can work for me. I'm not against that, you know?
There's no Quentin Nelson here, though, right? Everybody kind of knew, boy, this is a once-in-a 10-year guard that's coming out in this league, and Quentin Nelson. So you're right, though, about all that. But then I look at it and I think, wait a minute. Think about all the moves they made in the offseason. All these, they signed 6 different offensive linemen. They started way back when with Spencer Long. Oh, he's a center. And then said, nope, we're going to go make Mitch Morse the highest paid center. What does that do to Spencer Long? Suddenly he becomes a guard. Then they go get, I would think he'd be a guard, unless he's the backup center and you get rid of Russell Bodine, obviously. Then they go get John Feliciano. Then they go get Quentin Spain. All of these guys have started in this league. They've played a lot of snaps in this league. I can't see suddenly them saying, oh, we're going to just throw Deion Dawkins in the mix as well, who we just drafted 2 years ago, traded up in the second round as our franchise left tackle.
Right.
So to me, if you draft Dillard, I think it's bad news for Dawkins to even be on the roster, or at least down the road if it's not necessarily soon. And that's why I say I don't see that happening necessarily, but that would be an indication for me.
Right. They would have to have really looked at what went wrong up there and blamed him a lot more than a lot of us are guessing at that they would. Because you go, oh, well, you know, Incognito and Eric Wood left, and so, you know, that was a struggle for him. If they are, you know, able to, and I would think, you know, they can certainly assign blame for what they're trying to run, whereas we don't know what they're trying to run, and look at it and go like, yeah, you know, he was just bad. You know, we need to get better there, period.
I mean, did they make up a plan in the offseason? When they met in January, did they say, you know what we need? We need 5 new offensive linemen. That's what we need. 5. Right. Like if they said that, okay, well, you've already got 4, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. This could be number 5, I guess.
I want to say that the Bills could like the idea of like a new boss man on the offensive line, but every team wants that. You know, that might this position gets drafted high in drafts, and that'll probably happen again tomorrow. Sal Capaccio with us. I want to get to Washington and some of the trade speculation, but before that, we had a conversation in here about wide receivers, and I arrived at a position on this. My position is I don't see them spending anything valuable on wide receiver this weekend. I mean, something like last year, maybe, where they drafted a couple guys at the end. But I think they won't. And, you know, there are other positions where they'll want to address. There are good wide receivers, too. But they've spent in free agency on two guys. It might matter, Sal. I've mentioned this. I keep thinking about this, that they wouldn't tell each other, Brown and Beasley, that they were negotiating with both guys at the same time. Mm-hmm. Now they have both guys. Maybe they weren't expecting to get them both. You got somewhere with Foster. You still have Jones, who was a little bit productive, and he was a second-round pick, if that matters. I think it adds up to anybody significant complicates it. And if they were to draft a receiver, even in round two, I would probably walk away thinking, okay, they really want to throw the ball. But I'm not at that place with the Bills. I think they want Josh Allen to be competent, but I don't see them trying to become, you know, like a gunslinger kind of team.
Well, I think it's more – I don't disagree with you. I think what you're saying is right about the wide receivers, and I don't think the Bills are going to spend a premium pick on that position. I don't. But I think it's more about where the value is in this draft for that to happen, where they don't have to do that. Like, I think they'd still love to add, wow, can we get a guy to really help Josh? I think they've made this commitment, like I said, right? But if you really think about it and you look at it and you start to kind of pay attention to the people who know things, guys, I mean – But the prop bets, Mike, we were talking about yesterday. The prop bets on over-under wide receiver in the first round might be two right now. Two. That's it. Like, you're talking about maybe DK Metcalf and Marquise Brown, and that's it, and maybe not even in that order. So you could be getting really, really good value at wide receiver in rounds three and four, because certainly not all of them are going to go in round two, but suddenly you're going to have good wide receivers available. Like, right now, from the people I trust and listen to and the national guys and things like that, pretty much in unison, it's coming down to, yeah, we're really, there's not going to be many wide receivers in the first round. You're looking at one or two, and that's it. Now, suddenly, boom, where are you going to get that wide receiver? Are you going to spend it in the second round? That's fine. Now you might have to, you can wait until the third or even the fourth.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, like, how late do you think you'd be able to get, I mean, it depends at which ranking you look at, but I know you've written about and talked about N'Keal Harry at one point in your mock draft. Hakeem Butler's another name. Somebody called us earlier today about him, and I've watched a little bit on him, and he checks some boxes, you know, in my amateur opinion about it. Like, are those guys that you'll be able to get on Saturday or no?
I doubt it, but you know, because second and third, like, right. you're these guys are all second and third round picks, I think, that you're mentioning, but do you want to wait until the guy you want in the third? Somebody's going to be there in the third. Question is it the guy you want? Probably N'Keal Harry goes in the second, and you're like, oh, darn, like, we wanted him in the third. Right. But hey, here all of a sudden, here's Kelvin Harmon, we can take him. I really like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside from Stanford. A really nice player. And, you know, that's a guy that maybe could last till the third round. A.J. Brown, you know, D.K. Metcalf's teammate at Mississippi. Riley Ridley, Calvin's brother from Georgia. Probably that could be a Saturday guy there.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guarantee you a lot of people love him. Do you love the speed of a Paris Campbell and say, you know what, this guy can fly. We're going to take him on Saturday. He might be there.
Yep, we'll see what happens there. That's a good one. How about Washington? So this is kind of how I read today. Deferring to other people who are translating it with more experience doing so, the report out of Washington is that it sounds like Daniel Snyder is taking over the first round, control of the first round, and that there are people, maybe most people in the football department, who don't want the Redskins to pick a quarterback, but it sounds like that's where we're headed, that the Redskins, because the owner wants it, will be doing that. And say they want to get somewhere today, right? Like, This wasn't the day before the draft the Bills made the trade with the Bengals. It was well before the draft. But, you know, you just bounce up. What are the pros and cons of the Bills making such a deal today? I mean, I think I know them too, but I want to hear you sort of lay out what you think that could end up at.
You mean instead of waiting till tomorrow?
Yeah, like you take the chance of not having the luck go your way and Oliver or somebody like that being available to you if you do it early. But if that's you do right. it early, then, you know, there are advantages to that.
So here's how most teams do it, basically. And I'm sure the Bills probably are just like this. I'm pretty sure every team does this. You know, that you could have a guy, like, wow, we really like a guy. But you're taught as a GM, you're taught as a scout, you're taught as an evaluator not to fall in love with a guy. Not to be so on a guy, you know, and hit your wagon to him so much that you got to do whatever you can to get him. So what you do is you have a group of people, and you say, okay, out of this group, that means let's count how many there are. That means we're willing to trade down. There's 13 of them. That means we could trade down to 13. We don't want to go past 13 because there's 13 guys we're comfortable with, all right? So I think that's how you have to look at it. So with the Bills, with the Redskins, there would have to be 15 guys that they would say, you know what, we're okay with any of these guys that we're going to draft. Now, there may only be 13 they have, but they totally figure that at least two quarterbacks are going.
Right.
That's going to push two more. So the line of demarcation drops a little bit, if you will, because of that. They would have to do that. The con would be if they really only have 10 guys, right? I mean, there's only 10 guys we really we think are worthy of this. You never get 32 first-round grades, by the way, guys. Like, no team has 32 first-round grades in this draft because they never do. They have probably 20, maybe 25 at the tops in a really good draft. So on top of that, now you're talking about where we are, how far are we willing to go down to really say we're getting value for what we have. And I think you have to have 15 guys and probably maybe 13 in this case because of the quarterbacks, like I said, where they'd be comfortable. And if you do that, and it doesn't fall your way, and you don't adhere to that, that would be the risk of it.
Okay, and I think I will end up agreeing with you. I know how you described your feelings about this at the beginning of the conversation. I would love that, whether it's today or tomorrow, because I'm getting a free starter. I maybe get a second-round pick next year, which, you know, fine. Or a third this year, or something like that. 9-15, probably something like that. That's a free starter.
So let me ask you a question. If you're the Bills now, not as Mike Shope and his philosophy, but if you're the Bills and you really only have, let's say, 10 guys in this entire draft, you feel, and then there's a big separation, are you willing to go to 15 today?
Totally, but I can't really tell you what the Bills' philosophy is. I mean, I know what mine is, which is I don't know who the good players are going to be. I can like one guy more than the next guy, but I really don't care that much about that because who am I? I got 100 years of this league where people got that wrong constantly. So I wouldn't just be arrogant about it. I'd be like, well, at 15, I'm going to be great. I'm getting a starting whatever. Christian Wilkins, the guy you think, you know, maybe they like the most if they move down. Defensive tackle, or even if they don't. So I'm there. And if it's a third-round pick this year or a second-round pick next year, especially if it's next year, second round, I would say this about what's that? That's my starting tight end. You know, or it's a starting running back, or it's a safety.
Well, that's like another good point, Mike. Like, you could say, we've talked about Hockenson and Fant, right? And, like, okay, is 9 too high for a tight end? Maybe you have a philosophy of, I just can't do it. Like, I can't justify a tight end at 9, but once we get into the teens, I can. That would be a reason you'd do it, because you'd say, you know what, I can, if I do that and I get him at 15, I'm totally cool, but I would feel dirty about myself if I drafted him at 9, right? I mean, you might have that philosophy, and that's a reason to do it.
Yep. All right.
I think I'm inclined to wait just in case Ed Oliver falls or something. Like, I wouldn't want to get out of there. I value moving down. You could get burned. Somebody Washington finds a trade because they want to make sure that they're ready to move up again tomorrow if they want, or they just want to at least get to this spot. So maybe they find someone that, and I miss out and I don't get to go down at all. But I it'd be hard if I really like Ed Oliver. Like, respecting what Mike is saying about how, you know, there's a lot of misses anyway. But if this guy is that hot and, like, I get out of there and he ends up being there, oh, I'm kicking myself.
You know, if the Bills move down in the first round, which I still think is possible, I expect more move-ups later. And maybe not, but it just seems to me, I mean, they have 70 excuse me, two players in the roster right now. 73 if you count the guy that's roster exempt, so they get to bring 91 counting him. But my point is, they have 10 draft picks allotted to them here and slotted where they are. That would bring them to 82. Usually they sign way more than 8, you know, undrafted guys.
Right.
Usually it's 10, 12, 15 even. So, you know, they want to make it where, you know, they're not picking guys in the 6th and 7th round. They're like, eh, he might not make the roster. So if they move down and get even more than 10 picks, then I think some of those other picks are going to be used to move up a little bit later.
What do you think the odds are that they draft a punter?
Not very good.
Low?
Yeah.
Couldn't they come out of this weekend with a new punter?
I guess they could. I mean, I think they like Corey Bajorquez. They have Corey Carter, too, coming off the injury from last year in preseason. There were some rumors they were in on the kid King, the guy King from
Marquette King.
But that was, I reported, that was not true. They were not interested in him. They weren't having any discussions with his agent along those lines. But I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay. Then I
now
will
you
not...
just gave me something to think about. I better go look at punters. I didn't even think about it. Mike, come on, damn you.
Yeah, if they have those extra picks and they can't find a buyer, then they just, you know, let's get a punter out of this. Maybe there's some... You get the best punter in college football.
Yeah, maybe. I guess you could.
Thank you, Sal.
You're welcome, guys.
Do they still punt in college football?
Yes.
I see some high scores.
Do they? It's punting, yeah.
In the SEC, they punt?
Yes.
Alabama has a punter?
Oh, yeah. Nick Saban loves to punt.
He does?
Yeah, pin him deep.
Oh, pin him deep, absolutely.
I think their punter's the guy with, he's got the goggles.
They got a goggle guy?
Yeah, they got a goggle guy.
I'm interested.
Are you sure that's not the kicker?
Well, maybe it's the kicker. Maybe he does both.
I'm interested.
If he does both, then draft him.
Two positions and one guy.
Right. That's what I was going to say. John McEntee, I see it right here. Boise State, this is the guy you want. Averaged 70 yards a punt and an 8-second hang time.
Wow.
Everybody's getting better at sports as the years go by. Okay, and none of that's true, I think. Might be. 803-0550, what do you want? The draft is tomorrow night. We'll give you our hopes and dreams for this thing. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, with the update after this break on WGR.
Call 5 minutes for that? That's, why don't you have a hockey replay or something? Change the whole outcome of the game. Like, seriously, what is that? Call the two, okay, but a five? With something you don't even see? You just call the outcome. Joke, it's embarrassing.
What did they tell you on the ice as a team?
Oh, he says it looks pretty bad. Ferrell told me it looks pretty bad. Wait, if it looks pretty bad, you clearly do not see it. It's a face-off, it's a push. Probably 50% of the face-off players, when they lose, they give a small cross-check, right? If you want to call the cross-check, call it. That call, like, changes the whole outcome, changes the whole future of us, of the outcome of this year, and it's a joke. I mean, I would be embarrassed if I was them.
How about that? Jonathan Marchessault, Vegas.
I say late last night, hey, NHL, just stay out of the ditch. Just maybe bounce it off the guardrails a couple times. Let's try to keep it on the road.
Whew. Narrator.
Holy cow.
They couldn't.
Wow. Did they ever? I mean, you know, Paul an hour ago said, you know, kill a penalty. Like, okay, you know, I got time for that. It's 3-0. You know, so it's a really five minute power play is tough, but you still, even shorthanded for 5 minutes, you still should have been pretty heavily favored to win the game. I mean, this has happened exactly one time before in the history of the playoffs. I did not look up how many times it's happened ever on a 5 minute major that four goals were scored, but one time in the playoffs it happened. 1998, the Blues did it to the Kings. So it's not a, you know, you get a 5 minute penalty. What usually happens? It's like, well, before you know it, 2 minutes are already gone. I didn't even get in the zone yet. It's like, yeah, I got all this time, all kinds of time. I'm all good.
Well, Fleury did not have a bad game, but the first goal isn't great. I mean, that's what gets it going. They score like only a few seconds into the penalty.
Yeah.
That one shot by Couture. And his goal is at 9:20 of the third, so you have just under 11 minutes to go when the penalty happens. And the thing for me is, and I think this is a widely held thought, that the part that worries me or disturbs me is that they didn't make a call. The referees did not. That's part of what Marchessault is complaining about. They didn't call it when it happened. And then you've got the guy's head bleeding on the ice.
Right.
And they discuss it. And it's a five minute major. Like, hockey they have done that, and they have admitted to that in terms of suspensions, that the injury, the severity of the damage matters in what they do to the perpetrator. And I've never liked the logic of that, but I think it's just sort of plain that that's what will happen. That's what happens in this league. If the guy you hit dirty doesn't get hurt, you're fine. If he gets hurt badly, you're in trouble. And now to have that kind of logic apply to an on-ice call and maybe even input from outside, I don't know, like maybe even that, then you end up at, well, this looks bad. That's what Marchessault is saying. I liked his point. He said, if you're telling me it looks pretty bad, that means you didn't see the play. Like you're doing it based on, he says, this way, the outcome.
Right.
And he's right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, what looks bad? The guy lying there bleeding? Of course that looks bad. But was the cross-check that bad? Like that's where the assumption comes in. Like the officials all get together, and I think they probably didn't pay any attention to the cross-check because of one of the other points Marchessault was making there, which is guys do that all the time. Yeah, I'm thinking of Lindy. It's a little different. Lindy getting mad about a cross-checking penalty Zhitnik took once. That was pushing the pants. Yeah, all he did was push him in the pants. He didn't cross-check him. Like, yes, his stick was in a cross-checking position, but he didn't whale him. He pushed him in the pants. This is a face-off play. I lost the draw. Get out of my way. It's not a cross-check's cross-check. It's I hit you up there, not in the face, across the chest with my stick, but it really wasn't, you know, I didn't try to really wreck you with it. I just, come on, get out of my way kind of play. But then he's lying there. So I'm thinking the rest didn't even really watch it.
Right. They missed it.
And then it's, you know, so they don't know maybe that Stastny collided with Pavelski, and that's why Pavelski fell so awkwardly and hit his head like he did. I mean, it's just such a weird, it's a very weird play to have happen. I mean, to have that collision, that secondary collision happen like it did was just, you know, it's possible. Somebody probably wants to make this point. I think it probably deserves to at least be said at least once on this show if we're going to talk about that play. It's possible Pavelski's in the position he's in to get awkwardly collided with by Stastny because he's embellishing the extent of the cross check in the first place to try to draw a call. They're losing 3-0. It's game 7. You might think you're going to get a call if you react to that cross check in such a way that like, oh, that was worse than normal. Hey, come on. You know, guys do that. They try to dupe the officials. So, I mean, that's also possible, but the whole thing is just to lose.
Embarrassing.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely not staying out of the ditch.
Right.
I mean, they crashed the car.
Gerard Gallant, the Vegas coach, said the referee told him that he saw the player get cross-checked in the face.
Right.
Which is not what happened.
No.
So that's wrong. And look, I want to say this too. There are mistakes. Officials make mistakes because they're people, and that is not like that is not a crime. That is to be expected. That has always been true in sports. It'll always be true in sports. It's hard. And even with two guys, like it moves so fast, I can understand it if the official doesn't see it, because you can't look at everything. So that would be okay. But these sports leagues always lie about it. They always lie about it. They always have that press release or that statement that the guy in the booth gets handed, which is, well, this is why we made that call. That's goals that are allowed or disallowed. That's penalties sometimes. That's, I mean, replay reviews in football. They always just lie about it. They know that they can make an argument for anything because you can. I mean, even if the videotape tells you something, you can still figure out a way. They do it. And that's no good. We don't need that. I don't need Don Van Massenhoven, you know, basically begging off the fact that there was an egregious mistake. Like, look, that's what you say. That's what you say in life. That's what you say in sports. It should be the same. What do you do in life? Yeah, I did it. You're right. I'm wrong. Period. And what is Marchessault going to say? Or what are hockey fans going to say? Yeah. That's the way it goes.
Right. Yeah, they're probably going to swear and say it's horrible, but eventually they're just going to get to, okay, well.
What can you do?
Yeah, that's life in the city, you know. It's how it happens sometimes.
But so often they just try to make you think that there wasn't really a mistake, actually.
Right.
And you just look like such an idiot doing that sometimes.
Right, I mean, if you keep peeling this onion all the way to the end, you get to, why is it okay to cross-check a guy lightly after a face-off anyway? you're trying to gain an advantage. You're breaking a rule, but everybody does it. Like Marcia's still saying, it's just accepted. It's fine. It's no big deal. Okay. I mean, this is holding in football. I can't flag everything, so it's okay. I mean, just keep going. You know, the whole thing is just so flimsy. We'll figure out. I mean, I feared this would happen in football after the Saints thing, and then it seemed like it wasn't going to, and then at the very end of the owners' meetings, they, like, rushed it. Hey, we got the thing. We're going to do it. Okay.
Now we're going to review pass interference.
All right. So hockey, I would expect, is going to do the same thing.
Totally right.
Vegas is a new market. It's really hot there. Like, the league is going to respect that they got wronged here. I'm sure of it. And, you know, get ready. Here comes more stuff.
And that happens because fans don't have a voice. That happens because Tim Murray and Jason Botterill sit with us and say, no, replay is good. It's important because Murray would say, you've never been on the wrong end of a bad call. I'm like, Tim, I'm not denying that. I don't care. You cannot perfect this. And you are still going to have bad calls. It's just you can't avoid it. And the teams would rather put in more layers of rules and process so that they don't lose the way the Saints lost. But, you know, fans are just going to be like, yeah, that's how it goes. And these replay, this replay tedium and confusion and delays, it's just slowly sucking the life and fun out of sports. And I just think that that's obvious. And if you're on the inside, you wouldn't even know it. I mean, it's your job. It's right. Your life. You wouldn't right. even know it. So now hockey will be next. We're going to review penalties because we got to get it right and it's fair.
Yep.
And it's just going to make it worse.
Yep. It's really familiar. What was the drama? Was it Champions League? Man City thought they tied a game.
Yes, with Spurs.
Right, with Spurs. And it was barely, like, video review took it down. And, like, the reactions of video-assisted review is pretty new to soccer. Like, for years they've just had, like, okay, whatever, you know. But it's coming. And the reaction that got around soccer, like, one piece that I read about it was, you are taking the very essence of the moment away from the fans when the goal is scored, because they're going to wonder whether it's a good goal before they celebrate the goal. And I'm like, that is what I've been saying for 20 years about football.
That's right.
Like, any play happens in a game, and you are conditioned to go, is there a flag? First it was flags, or a little yellow icon on the screen somewhere to tell me there's a penalty somewhere. And now that's compounded by replay, so you are guarded about everything that happens now. And that's the opposite of what it's supposed to be about. I mean, I know it's about the trophies and it's about championships and, you know, it's about just outcomes. Sure. For fans, it's about those moments. That's why we want to be there. That's why we want to watch. Otherwise, just read about it in the paper the next day. I want to be there in the moment when it happens and believe it's real.
Baseball games, over and over now, you got to, every close play, you got to see that cutaway to the manager who's holding one finger up to the umpire. Like, my assistant is looking at this, right. And the game just stops until that manager decides whether to challenge the play. They play 162 freaking games a year and still have almost half the teams, or whatever, 12 teams make the playoffs. And still, we got to sit there and figure out if the guy was safe at first in the fourth inning in Detroit. Why? Because those guys in the room don't want to lose on a mistake. And we're out here going, guys, it's okay. You're the Tigers. You are still going to lose 94 games. This call at first, you will probably still lose this game if you get this call. So what? All of it is so what? All of it. The Saints were upset. The Saints' righteous indignation. They didn't interfere the whole game. There wasn't another play. Just it. There's the argument, you cannot win it. You cannot win it. Filippone tweeted, wait a minute. Virginia won the national championship, even though they double dribbled and the refs didn't see it. You have Vegas lose on a penalty that wasn't even called, but then it was made. And you had a third one. This is another obvious one recently. Oh, the Saints.
The Saints thing, right.
The wrong team went to the Super Bowl. You ever think of, and he's, you know, echoing you, or, you know, he's a smart guy. He goes, you ever think about really what's, if the replay doesn't work, why do we even have it? The replay can't change any of that. Can't find a double dribble. Can't fix pass interference. And sports always does the wrong thing. We're like, we'll set it up so that it can fix pass interference. Sure, that'll work. Right. Then it'll be, but wait a minute. That was illegal contact, guys.
Right.
That was actually illegal contact. That was not pass interference. Mm-hmm. So we will not look at that, even though it was the same amount wrong. Right. We will not look at that because that was actually different.
Just keep peeling.
It's so stupid. Fans do not have a voice. If fans had a voice, then none of that stuff would be, well, a lot of fans would agree with it. But, you know, at least we would have a chance. By the time Joe is 30, everything about sports will just be constantly, they won't even have officials and umpires. You don't. Why have them? You're just going to do it from the booth. You're just going to do it from Toronto. You call the game from Toronto. Look how good the camera work is. What do you need the ref for? You didn't need the ref last night. They did not make that call, but then they did because they had blood.
Right.
Well, slashing. It's only slashing if the guy's stick breaks. Then it's slashing. It's not slashing. That's stick breaking. That's the penalty you're calling is stick breaking. It's not hooking. Hooking used to be like hook, like Groucho Marx maybe. Now it's just tapping. Hooking is changed to tapping.
It's not very manly.
Tapping. No, because you think of tap dancing maybe.
I don't know.
Well, you got to work on the language. Right. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. This is WGR.
That's a bad shot. I care what anybody says. That's a bad shot. But, hey, he made it. That story won't be told that it was a bad shot. We live with that.
Paul George, maybe a little bitter, losing to Damian Lillard's 37-foot buzzer beater last night, give him 50 points and give Portland a series win. Maybe a little bit. He was the guy on him. Doesn't play it badly either. He's like, are you going to shoot that? Okay, well, I'll just jump and put my hand up.
Does he try that if the game isn't tied? Or does he try like, because
I like that.
You miss that shot. Okay, well, it's overtime, right? You can be a little loose there. You know, maybe you try to get it, you know, a more reasonable distance away, you know. That was one of the things. As soon as I saw the highlight, the first 10 times I saw the highlight, I didn't know the score was tied.
But it makes sense.
Right, so I watched it, and I went like, oh, wow, that's really impressive. Hey, I wonder what the score was. And it was tied? Well,
takes a little bit away from it. Just a little tiny bit.
A little bit, yeah. If you're down, you know, down one.
Yeah, and that would have been big. They were at home.
Yeah.
That would have been big. Still pretty good, but
yeah,
yes.
No, it was
I agree with your point.
It was a great shot.
Yeah. It is a little bit different if it's tied. That's right. It's already time for a break?
Yeah. All right, whatever.
At least the replay conversation was good, I thought.
We can blow. Well, yes.
Right is right.
It should continue to be talked about whenever it makes sense to talk about it on this show until we're dead or just not here anymore.
I mean, a lot of smart hockey people got on board with this today or did the same thing we're doing, which is just saying all their stuff again, which is, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it, hockey. I know how you guys think. You're going to want to review all this more. Add review now, but it's actually bad. Sean McIndoe, I mentioned him yesterday too. Like he said something like, "I gotta write on this," and then he eventually got around to tweeting. I just realized I've already done it. Here's everything I said about it last time because I predicted exactly what happened last night would happen, and he did. He's big on the puck over the glass penalty. Like, he thinks that's really dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never agreed with that. I think it's fine. Keep the puck in play. I don't want to have to figure out whether you meant to do it.
Right.
Because it can be a tactic you would use
yes, for
to
sure.
stop a play.
Goalies are so good at playing the puck now. Goalies would do it. I mean, yes, I think you absolutely.
So I like the penalty.
Yeah.
And he said something like, sometimes you get, as a guy who, this was two nights ago maybe, as a guy who hates that call, I should point out that there are like 100,000 slashing and cross-checking and roughing penalties that are not called in games. It's about as bad. And I tweeted back at him, it's a million times worse. All that other stuff is a lot worse. Call cross-checking all the time. I know the game would take forever. We've had this conversation over and over. But that would actually be fair. The game is overall pretty good. I mean, it's not like I need 20 more penalties per team in every game. I'm not saying that
right.
I want that.
No, yeah.
But there are all kinds of liberties taken. We all know that from our first days watching hockey. It's still true.
That's how I thought about last night's game. I didn't even think about the replay. It was just, hey, look how fun hockey can be when there's actual power plays in the game. And even though the call kind of sucked, like a 5-minute major penalty is what breeded that entire game being as fun as it was. Because before that power play, it's 3-0 and it's whatever. I was watching the basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't need them to be making wrong calls like that. But
right.
To me, it's evidence of like how fun a game can be when there's actual penalties being called.
Yep.
And power plays.
Power plays mean goals and lead changes. And fun and angst and all that stuff that like feelings happen from that. That's what you want, right? When you're watching a sport, you want to feel something.
Yes.
We will take the break now if it's okay with Bulldog. Come back and get into the draft again. Different scenarios. And you can call us 803-0550 if there's a thing you really are hoping for tomorrow night or rooting against Bills wise. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.